It's lupin season here in Vermont, and to most of us, all the lupin we see looks about the same. Big purple flowers along the roadsides. These robust plants aren't actually native to Vermont, but there is a very rare species of lupin that is native to Vermont, and there are almost none of these plants left in the state. Thankfully, some of the remaining lupins live at Doris Maynard's house in the Colchester area. Doris has been working closely to preserve these remaining plants with Grace Glynn, botanist for Vermont's Department of Fish and Wildlife. And recently, reporter Erica Heilman met with Doris and Grace at Doris's home. Doris has given the lupin names. We'll start there.
Okay, so this was, I thought, there was Walter Gladys. This one was Doris, I thought, but maybe that's really Doris. This one was Doris right there, and this one is Donald, which is him. And then there's another one I'm missing that was Dorothy, because I don't even see the pot.
Yes, I think we're going to have to dig around.
I don't even see the pot for where Dorothy was, so we'll figure that one out. And then over here we have David. He's in the first little one here. This is David. And this was going to be, this one was named Noni. I named her Unknown for a stillborn child that my grandma had, but my daughter wouldn't let me call her Unknown. So I named her Noni. And then we have Rodent, Hammerhead, and this is Pumpkin.
Okay, so
Pumpkin
Rodent
and Noni didn't make it. Rodent, Hammerhead, and Pumpkin are my two kids that are going to inherit from me, and Pumpkin, who will inherit from Uncle Donald.
Okay, so I'm thinking Rodent and Pumpkin, or Rodent and
Hammerhead.
Hammerhead, those are pet names for your children.
Yeah.
And now for your lupin.
Yes, okay. Yes. Yep. But if we're going to introduce Erica to the lupins, we should start at the beginning at Walter. Is that okay with you?
That's great. And that's where the natural plants are. So this is, as you know, this is our last native population. So this is an actual natural population. We formerly had at least 9 populations of sundial lupin in Vermont, and we've dwindled down because of habitat loss.
We would look, my cousin Walt and I, from the driveway of Grandpa's house, it was Grandpa's house at the time, looking across, the whole field was blue. Now, we had no idea of any of it. We were just little kids, you know, those were Grandpa's flowers or whatever, because Grandpa owned all this road. And the whole field was blue. And through the years, as Gracie has said, the life and building and so on has taken away what I didn't even realize was a treasure. But
it's a long-known population. So we keep a database at the Heritage Inventory of all of our rare plant populations in the state. So we track carefully how they're doing, where they are. We come and monitor them. And we often collect seed from the rarest species exactly for this reason. This is just a great story about the importance of seed banking, because if we hadn't had, it was actually volunteers who work with us through Native Plant Trust, a conservation organization. They came and they collected seed. I think it was here and at Porter's Point School, and they put them in a seed bank in Massachusetts in these cold vaults, long-term storage. So when I came along and noticed, geez, this population has really dwindled down to a size that's so small that it couldn't support seed collection now. So thankfully they had collected seed back then when there were 100 plants at least. And then we were able to take that seed out of the seed bank and grow out these plants.
Wait a minute. Is that what it is?
No. Filming in this area is always.
Thank you.
There's
the F-35s showed up, which made it very difficult to talk about lupin, native or otherwise. Grace and I drove out to the Sandbar Wildlife Management Area in Milton. They had just done a controlled burn in the forest where Grace plans to plant some native lupin soon.
So there is a rare lupin in a few places in Vermont that is the same species as the stuff you can get in, you know, seed packs or whatever, but it is not the same genetics. Who cares? Why do we care about that?
Yeah, you may actually have sundial lupin in your garden if you've gone online and bought sundial lupin plants. We actually ask people to avoid planting sundial lupin in the vicinity of our natural populations. So that's around those sand plain habitats. That's because those planted plants are going to have very different genetics from our Vermont plants, and there's actually a potential for genetic contamination of our native population if we start planting a lot of different genetics of sundial lupin around the sand plains. We don't want that, especially because we know these plants are going to face a lot of challenges, increasing challenges, continued challenges from climate change. So we want to preserve our Vermont genetics that are adapted to this place.
Maybe just tell us the towns not to do it in.
Yes, please don't plant Lupinus perennis in Colchester, Burlington, or Essex Junction. If you're outside of that area, you can go ahead and plant Lupinus perennis, but we really appreciate just reducing risk to our native populations.
It's too bad if you want to live in Colchester.
If you want to live in Colchester, you are...
Buy a boat. You have these 10. Let's say you do get your 10 populations back. Why do we sleep better at night knowing that those 9 beds of native lupins are out there? Why do you sleep better at night?
Well, why would we allow the species to blink out? It's not what we do. We have played a role in its decline, and we have to play a role in trying to bring it back. And this is a species that we know it transplants well. It can be moved. We have these sites. Why would we not do that? I really care about these habitats too, these sand plain habitats, because I think of them as real underdogs. They're really threatened. They have crappy soil that looks like it's just somebody dumped a sandbox out here. You know, why would anybody care about that driving down the road? But they actually have these really unique assemblages of plants, and we've lost the vast majority of them. So if this can help people get a little bit of a glimpse into what it must have looked like. I mean, imagine the expanse of pitch pine forest, and when those burns came, you know, we have some evidence that there was natural fire here. There was probably indigenous stewardship through fire influencing these communities. It just feels important to give people a glimpse into that.
This is Vermont Public. I'm Erica Heilman.